Greetings once again, America. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the Worldview. That's right, it is the Weekly Worldview, and I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back to the show. Well, we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do take the events of the week and focus them through the lens of original thought. It's so good to have you back for another week, and there's so much news that has happened this week. It's been a big week. There's so much we may not get to it all, so we're going to have to dive right in. And I always try to start with something light, something amusing, something that could be perceived as to make fun of liberals in general, heathens in particular. And so we're going to open up with one Nancy Pelosi. Yes, she is one of the stories that's been going around in the news this week. And, well, Nancy Pelosi, she's the Speaker of the House, if you can believe that. I mean, just stop and think about that for a second. How scary is that? Nancy Pelosi is third in line to the presidency, and she has said that she will not talk anymore about her charge that the CIA lied to her in 2002 about their use of the ever-popular waterboarding enhanced interrogation technique. She says, quote, "I have made the statement that I'm going to make on this. I don't have anything more to say about it, and I stand by my comment." Now, there are some Republicans that I think had something to say about this, but who really cares? Who really cares what the Republicans have to say? Because the media is going to let it drop at this, I do believe. And that's pretty much it. And to prove it, she ended her news conference by saying, quote, "We're going forward in a bipartisan way for jobs, health care, and energy for our country. I won't have anything more to say about the CIA." It's funny because allegedly, Nancy is still recovering from second-degree burns resulting from her last news conference, during which her pants allegedly burst into flames right there on camera. So Nancy has basically, she's pulled a Bill Clinton. She said, let's just move on. And I guess we'll see if the pliant media, who seems to be in love with Ms. Pelosi, will just allow her to move on with her life. And if there's anyone who needs to move on, it is Nancy Pelosi. She needs to be moving on down the road. Now, Joe Biden, this will be a weekly installment, the Joe Biden Watch, because Joe Biden can be counted on to embarrass himself, the president, the United States of America, and Western civilization in general virtually every time he opens his mouth. And apparently, according to a story that I pulled down from the Reuters wire, Joe was recently attending the Gridiron Club dinner in Washington, and apparently he told his dinner mates about the existence of a secret bunker under the old new U.S. Naval Observatory, which is now the home of the vice president. The bunker, you'll recall, is believed to be the secure, undisclosed location, well, formerly undisclosed location, that Dick Cheney used to hide out in, and where he was there on 9-1-1. And so now it's been disclosed by one Joe Biden. The guy just can't help himself. Apparently, according to Eleanor Clift, Newsweek magazine's Washington contributing editor, she said Biden revealed the location while filling in for President Obama at the Gridiron dinner. Is Eleanor Clift still alive? Is that a fact? I need to get someone on the staff to confirm that, because I've seen some recent photos and I thought, no, you think she's still alive? Okay, well, I certainly am fallible. I don't know everything. I'm just basically, you know, going on what I saw. But apparently, Eleanor Clift is still alive. I hadn't heard from her in quite some time, adding to the rumors that perhaps she had passed from the scene, but apparently not. Eleanor Clift is not only still alive, but apparently she still has a job at Newsweek, which is unbelievable. All right, now, I've got another story. We're in the politics file, by the way. I wanted to open with something silly and stupid, so I dove right in to the politics file. And I've got one, Alan Grayson, a story about a representative named Alan Grayson, who is apparently a Democrat from Florida. And he is introducing legislation that would be the first to make paid vacation time a requirement under federal law. The bill would require companies with more than 100 employees to offer a week of paid vacation to both their full and part-time employees. And then it's the next year it's 2 weeks, and then the next year it's companies with 50 or more employees. Before you know it, they're going to come to a company with one or two employees, and they're going to force us to go on vacation and pay ourselves, I suppose. This is what happens, apparently, when the government begins to take over the private sector. Now, what does this bozo have to say? I underlined a bunch of his comments, but then apparently I went back and I scratched them all out because, they're just so irrelevant and so stupid. Anyway, the bottom line of this story that I wanted to get to, I don't really care what Mr. Grayson has to say. He's obviously a communist moron. But the article from Politico tells us, not surprisingly, some in the travel industry are salivating over Grayson's bill. Grayson spokesman Todd Jurkowski said the U.S. Tour Operators Association and the Adventure Travel Trade Association are both on board. Other tourism and labor groups are expected to sign on in the coming days. And by sign on, what that means is send large quantities of money to Mr. Grayson and other representatives who can help to shepherd this bill through the legislative process and past constitutional muster so that they can make millions of dollars. It's really not surprising, folks, now that the government's taken over the car companies and a number of banks and financial institutions, that we're going to end up like a bunch of Europeans, taking 30 days off a year, not getting anything done, and obsessed with our own entertainment all the time. That's where we're headed, ladies and gentlemen. That's what I'm afraid of. Anyway, Alan Grayson, let's keep him on the radar screen. The guy is obviously dangerous, and another one who makes the list of the not all that bright. Now, in order to, let's try to make things a little more cheerful, we'll jump into the justice file. And let's see, I was going to start... I really don't want to start with that story because it's a bummer. As so many stories are these days in the justice file, there's nothing to get all that excited about. Except, here we have Dateline Bonterre, Missouri. Two death row inmates spent some of their last moments apologizing for their crimes before they were put to death 6 hours apart in Texas and Missouri. Yes, one Dennis Skillicorn expressed sorrow for the 1994 murder of Richard Drummond, who stopped to offer him help after a car carrying Skillicorn and two other men had stalled along Interstate 70. Skillicorn, the murderer, who murdered basically a Good Samaritan, said right before they injected him with the soft, mushy, nice, lethal injection drugs, he said, "The last 15 years I've lived daily with the remorse of my actions, and I'm deeply sorry for all that the Drummond family has been forced to endure." Skillicorn was promptly pronounced dead at 12:34 a.m., 11 minutes after the initial injection procedure began. Praise the Lord and thank God. So he apologized right before he went to meet the Lord. And if you're about to go to meet the Lord, you should have your heart in a very humble way, because anything else is going to be detrimental to the destination of your eternal soul. Now, supporters of this murder had wanted Skillicorn sentenced commuted to life in prison. They called him a role model to other inmates, to which I say no, no, no. Now that he's been executed, now he's a role model for other inmates. Yes. Now, Governor Jay Nixon, there in Missouri, he decided against clemency, and he says that the reason is that Skillicorn had also been convicted of two subsequent murders in Arizona. As if to say that the life of the victim, the Good Samaritan, who tried to help this guy out on the highway, Richard Drummond, as if his life wasn't worth enough to put this dirtbag to death. This hopefully repentant dirtbag, I should say. Anyway, and now Dateline Huntsville, Texas, meanwhile, Michael Lynn Riley apologized repeatedly in the moments before he received lethal injection. He said, quote, "I know I hurt you very bad. I truly am sorry for the hurt and pain I caused you." He said that to the family. And so I guess we'll see on Judgment Day. The good news is that the just a system sometimes works by accident, and they actually put these people to death. I think, let's see, these guys were on death row for a grand total of, 15 or 20 years, somewhere in there. Let's see, one at 1986, one occurred in 1994. Yeah, 20 years or so, on average, that they were allowed to be educated and medicated by the dollars, kept alive, kept comfortable through the financing of the citizens of the states of Missouri and Texas before they were finally put to death. But even by accident, the justice system sometimes works. And we'll see on Judgment Day where these two fellows ended up. And that'll be worth seeing. But now into the justice file. Dateline Jonesboro, Georgia, from the Associated Press. A Georgia man was sentenced to 100 years in prison for poisoning his two children to extort money from Campbell's Soup. Yeah, the girl and the boy, then 18 months and 3 years old, were hospitalized after one William Cunningham fed them soup tainted with prescription drugs and lighter fluid. Cunningham had called Campbell's Soup and threatened to sue the company because its soup was contaminated. And a family member said that the children may suffer lifelong respiratory problems after swallowing the poison soup. The children's mother, Rhonda Cunningham, filed for divorce during the case. Just a bizarro story. What's going on with people, you know? People are really, really broken. Dateline, but for some good news. Now, we want some good news, right? That's a depressing story that makes you wonder what's happening to humanity. Dateline, Morristown, New Jersey. Pascual Gonzalez was sentenced to 5 years in prison for assaulting a 14-year-old girl last year and harassing and touching her friend. He was a volunteer sports coach, and he had pleaded guilty back in January of this year. He cried before the judge and apologized for his crimes. He says he wishes, quote, "this had never, ever, ever happened." Now, a mother of one of the victims attacked the 39-year-old pervert in the Morris County Courthouse in Morristown, New Jersey, and pummeled him in the corridor. She attacked him physically. Yeah. Now, the woman who beat the pervert hasn't been charged with a crime there in Morristown, New Jersey. So, see, everyone is not insane. Here's a woman whose heart was in the right place. And more from the justice file, and it's not good news. I'm sorry, but it's just not good news. Dateline Marinette, Wisconsin. A Michigan man who killed three teens in a shooting rampage at a popular swimming spot in the Wisconsin border last summer showed no remorse as he was sentenced Thursday to life in prison without parole. Scott Johnson was sentenced to three consecutive life terms for the teens' deaths and, for good measure, 295 additional years for six other counts. Now, he told the AP in March that he's indifferent to the homicides. He's as indifferent as if he had spilled a glass of milk. He told his victim's family that they shouldn't complain because their community donated thousands of dollars to pay for their funerals. Yeah. And during the sentencing, the judge noted that it would probably cost about $1 million to imprison Johnson for life, but told Johnson that he suspects that the people of Wisconsin would pay even $10 million if it means locking you up so you can never do this again. And I would say to the judge that the citizens of Wisconsin would only have to pay a few hundred, perhaps a few thousand dollars to put this dog where he deserves, put him down like a dog, exactly like he deserves, and then maybe he could find some remorse in his heart if he knew he was about to be killed by the families of the victims of his murders. Perhaps. But what did he say in the courtroom? What did Scott Johnson, murderer, who shot and killed three teenagers, what did he say in courtroom after he was sentenced to life? He said, "I'll laugh, I'll joke, I'll find a way to get through the day." Yeah. Johnson initially had pleaded insanity, but he dropped that defense. In January, a court-appointed psychologist who examined him reported that he told her that his, quote, "purpose was to kill." He said, quote, Jesus could have been walking with Moses that day, and I would have killed them. Now, Mr. Johnson, I've got news for you. At some point in the not-too-distant future, you are going to meet Jesus, and he may or may not be walking with Moses. But I can assure you that on that day, your knee shall bow and your tongue will confess that he is Lord. And while you may not find remorse in your heart for the people that you murdered, you will serve as some sort of example to our justice system. Doug McBurney in the Weekly Worldview back with you. Just to top that story off, Mr. Johnson, the murderer, who is going to meet Jesus and perhaps Moses someday, he, at the time of the murders, he was unemployed and he had been living with his mother. She described him as despondent since his wife left him in 2001 and took their two children away. So, you know, all of the people who think that no-fault divorce and that the divorce culture is actually more healthy than unhappy couples staying together for the sake of the children. Well, here's just another case to prove that you're absolutely wrong. A culture that promotes divorce also promotes lawlessness, which leads to murder. And if you don't believe that, well, just look at the news every day, for crying out loud. And perhaps you'll be convinced if you keep an open mind. Dateline Newark, New Jersey, a defense attorney and former federal prosecutor was charged last week with arranging the killing of one witness and trying to hire a hitman to kill another. Yes, an attorney. Can you believe this? What a shock. Paul Berggren, Esquire, is accused of murder, conspiracy to commit murder, and racketeering in a 14-count federal indictment. Berggren has represented Lil' Kim, Queen Latifah, and other rap stars. He also represented Sergeant Javal Davis, a New Jersey soldier who served about 4 months in a military prison for mistreating Iraqi prisoners there at Abu Ghraib prison, if you'll remember. Now, this lawyer, there's a quote from him that I just had to read, especially in light of the story we just read out of Michigan and that gentleman's attitude after being sentenced to life, having no remorse for the murder of his victims. This lawyer, Mr. Berggren, he defended his no-holds-bar style of defending his clients, saying, quote, "I have absolutely no fear of challenging authority when it needs to be challenged. I don't fear the consequences as long as I'm within the boundaries of the law. That's what makes me better than most other attorneys." And this will be an interesting chap to sit down with just before Judgment Day starts, because it'll be interesting to see how his theory of challenging authority while remaining within the bounds of the law goes over on Judgment Day. My guess is it's not going to be a happy time for Paul Berggren, and I will look forward to being there on that day, along with you, as I know we all will be together on that day. All right, now, do I want to go right into the domestic tranquility file off of that? Well, I suppose I have to. All right. The domestic tranquility file is pretty thick this week, as it generally is. Dateline Milwaukee, apparently six women were murdered within a three-square-mile area of Milwaukee's north side between 1986 and 2007. People had suspected that there was a serial killer. Well, apparently police now say that there is a DNA link to an unknown man. Yeah. Some people in the community, including the women's families, according to the AP story, wonder why it took police so long to discover the DNA link and announce it, and whether some officers' biases against the victims' lifestyle. See, these victims were drug addicts and prostitutes. So the community's concerned that some of the officers' biases against the victims' lifestyles and race kept them from focusing their attention on the crimes. Well, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? If you're a drug-addicted prostitute, well, you know what? Message to girls out there everywhere. Don't do drugs and become a prostitute, or you could end up dead in a back alley and no one will even care. Now, that is a valuable lesson. A terrible story, but a valuable lesson to the young girls out there everywhere, contemplating how they want to live their lives. Well, this is what happens to drug-addicted prostitutes. They end up murdered, and the police don't work as hard. Now, of course, the police in Milwaukee, they say that's not true. They've worked as hard as they possibly can. But when you're a drug-addicted prostitute, you don't command the attention of the authorities as much as if you're a productive, normal person. And so, note to girls out there, just think about that and try to keep on the narrow way, because otherwise you'll end up in a garbage can and no one will even care. By the way, police in Milwaukee have submitted or resubmitted DNA samples for more than 20 other unsolved homicides to the state's crime lab to see if they are related. So the police might have a case here. Here we've got 26 murders over the course of 20 years. I mean, there's so many murders, it's awfully hard for the police to keep up with the avalanche of murder cases that are pouring into their offices, whether they're drug-addicted prostitutes or not. That's an awful lot of murders to try to solve. And we wish the Milwaukee police the best of luck in solving those crimes so that this person can be brought to justice, this murderer. Now, Dateline, Albuquerque, New Mexico. This is an update on a story we did last week. A single mother accused of suffocating her 3-year-old son and burying him in a playground will face life if convicted on first-degree murder charges. That's right, she will face life. For killing an innocent 3-year-old child, she will receive lifetime benefits from the government there in Bernalillo County. Yeah, in fact, the district attorney there in Bernalillo County, just outside of Albuquerque, said that no circumstances would qualify Tiffany Toribio, the mother who killed her child, no circumstances would qualify her for the death penalty. Now, you'll remember that New Mexico, with great fanfare, did away with the death penalty not too long ago. Their corrupt governor signed the legislation to eliminate the death penalty, virtually eliminate the death penalty in New Mexico. And now that policy has begun to bear fruit. That policy now, in conjunction with the overall policy of Western culture for the last 50 years, to allow the killing of children, to tolerate the killing of children. You'll remember last week we reported that a child was found buried in a sandbox at a playground, and no one knew where the child came from. There were no missing persons reports. Well, now the mother's been arrested. She's going to receive lifetime benefits from the state for basically complying with the policies of the state of New Mexico. Well, maybe she didn't Maybe the problem is she didn't follow all of the policies in particular regarding the killing of children. Had she handled this a little differently, she probably wouldn't even been arrested. But she did not follow the policies of child killing as basically endorsed by the National Right to Life Committee and the majority of the pro-life movement over the last 30 years. Laws ending with, and then you can kill the baby. All right, now let's move on. Dateline Naples, Utah. Aaron N. Harrison, a 21-year-old punk, was arrested Thursday and put in jail, charged with attempted homicide for the beating of a pregnant teenager who police say she asked him for the pummeling in an effort to abort her 6-month-old fetus. Now, I don't know National Right to Life's opinion on the pummeling of a woman's abdomen in order to kill the child, but I'm sure they're open to at least discussing the possibility of how that might reduce some abortions, and perhaps that's one of the things they could champion in the next legislative cycle. Perhaps a pummeling of the torso law in order to somehow reduce abortions. So we need to submit that up to National Right to Life and see if that passes their constitutional muster and fits in with their overall strategy of regulating the killing of innocent people. Prosecutors, by the way, in the Naples, Utah story, back to the story, prosecutors are weighing possible charges against the 17-year-old girl who was pummeled by the 21-year-old boy. The 21-year-old man. He faces up to 1 to 15 years in prison if he's convicted for attempting to murder an unborn child. 1 to 15 years. The fetus survived, but doctors won't know for certain what injuries it may have sustained until it is born. Harrison is an acquaintance of the girl, and she is not the father of the child, for whatever that's worth. Anyway, we'll need to get this off to National Right to Life and see if that fits in. They have a number of laws, you know, that that direct and tell doctors and governing officials how to appropriately murder an innocent person so that National Right to Life can still raise funds to promote the regulation of the killing of innocent people. But we don't know if pummeling the torso of a pregnant girl, that may even be on the pale. For National Right to Life. But we will submit that to their public policy committee and see what they think. Dateline, New York City. Michelle Lee was training to be a forensic investigator for the New York City Police. She was stabbed to death at her home in late April. An ex-boyfriend, Gary McGurk, has been charged in her killing. Dateline, New York. A man was so desperate to avoid a parking ticket that he ran over an NYPD traffic cop before she could write it. He broke her legs and caused a serious head injury over a parking ticket, for crying out loud. Dateline LaRose, Louisiana, from the Associated Press. A student shot himself in the head Monday at a Louisiana middle school after he pointed a handgun at a teacher and fired over her head. He fired the gun over the teacher's head, then went in the bathroom and shot himself. There's no indication the boy was in trouble with the school or with the law. Nope. This is your typical average public school product. A child who at any moment, because he has no value of his own life or the life of others, and has virtually no knowledge of the Creator God, that's virtually been rubbed out of his mind. This public school product simply exploded one day and shot himself in the bathroom. Now, the kid survived. The kid survived as far as we know. He was in the hospital. But there's just no indication that the kid had any trouble other than your typical public school modern-day cultural education. That was the only problem anyone was aware of, and nobody talked about that problem until right here on this very broadcast today. Dateline Hawaiian Gardens, California. According to a federal racketeering indictment unsealed this past week, a Latino street gang waged a racist campaign to eliminate the city's black residents through attempted murders and other crimes. The indictments against the gang members detail attempted murder, kidnapping, firearms, narcotics, and other charges related to attacks by the gang, which is predominantly Latino and mainly operates in Hawaiian Gardens, a city of about 15,000 in southeastern Los Angeles County. The gang is called the VHG Gang, the Barrio Hawaiian Gardens Gang, and their members have expressed a desire to rid the city of Hawaiian Gardens of all African Americans and have engaged in a systematic effort to achieve that result by perpetrating crimes specifically against African Americans. Bit of ethnic cleansing right there in East LA. By the way, all the white people and any black people with half a brain have already left Hawaiian Gardens. They're going to leave it to the Latino gangs there. The Hawaiian Gardens gang. Dateline, Bakersfield, California. A 4-year-old boy may be permanently blinded because his father bit out one of his eyes and mutilated the other. Police said that 34-year-old Angel Vidal Mendoza appeared to be under the influence of PCP when he attacked the boy in April. Mendoza's son, Angelo Mendoza Jr., according to police, told investigators on the scene, "My daddy bit me on my eyes and hands." After attacking the boy, police said Mendoza rolled his wheelchair outside and hacked at his own legs with an axe. Mendoza has been charged with mayhem, torture, and cruelty. So a message to everyone. PCP is really bad stuff. It's just an unbelievably shocking story. He's accused of mayhem, torture, and child cruelty. If someone does an amount of chemicals, if someone introduces enough chemicals in their body so that they physically harm other people, they should be put to death. That's all there is to it. Because a guy on PCP, he blinded the boy. He bit out one of the boy's eyes. He could have easily killed the boy and not even known it because he's so whacked out on drugs. The guy's definitely... It really, really upsets me, that story. That really, really upset me. Okay. Dateline Ventura, California. Authorities say an intruder barged into a Southern California beach home and fatally stabbed a man and his pregnant wife in front of their 9-year-old son. The boy and his 11-year-old sister, who was asleep in another room, were not injured. Brock and Davina Husted were both 42 years old. Davina Husted was 4 to 5 months pregnant. No arrests have been made in the case. And that is the domestic tranquility file for this week. And before we go to break, I want to move to the international file. Because I have to get out of America. After reading those stories, I literally want to flee the country. From the Australian newspaper, The Age, dozens of cars have been smashed, 14 people injured, 46 arrested in riots by Muslim migrants over the alleged defacing of a Quran by a policeman. Police said they would investigate the allegation that an officer tore up an Iraqi migrant's Quran while checking his identity papers in Athens, Australia, in Athens, Greece. I'm sorry, it's an Australian newspaper. Athens, Greece. Police are accused of tearing up a Quran, so naturally, what do the Muslims do? They riot in the streets, burn cars, hurl rocks, bottles, and sticks at people. Basically try to crack people's skulls open. And this article, there's a Greek a rights activist named Thanasis Kourakakalakalakalis, and he says the protests showed that the Islamic migrants indeed have a voice. And I find it interesting that... left-wing activists, these human rights activists, civil rights activists, whatever they call themselves these days, they find some satisfaction in promoting tolerance of those who would just as soon behead them as rally with them in the streets in a riot or a protest. And I wonder, what's with the Muslims? You know, you draw a cartoon, one of their Qurans gets ripped up, their holy, holy book. Everything's so holy with these people. Are they so insecure that any insult to their book or their prophet must be met with violent protest? You know, and they execute Christians, by the way, for preaching and converting Muslims. Conversion to Christianity in a Muslim country is a death penalty offense. These Muslims are very insecure. So I would invite any one of these Muslim rioters or any other Muslim who considers himself so holy and so devout, you can come to our church any given Sunday, and we will let you tear up a Bible, and we will let you cast aspersions on our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, as long as you will submit to a cross-examination afterwards by the elders of our church. So you can vent all your rage, and all your Muslim street rage, and you can defile the Bible and say whatever you want about Christians. But we want the opportunity to cross-examine you afterwards, the elders of our church. And this brings us to our verse for the week from the book of Isaiah, the first chapter, starting in the 16th verse. The Lord says to us, "Cease to do evil, learn to do good. Seek justice, rebuke the oppressor, defend the fatherless, plead for the widow. Come now and let us reason together, says the Lord. Though your sins are like scarlet, they shall be as white as snow. Come, let us reason together, says the Lord." So if you've got a problem with the Lord, he's willing to sit down and reason with you. He's not going to throw a Molotov cocktail into your automobile over the whole thing. He's willing to reason with you and perhaps lead you to the path of salvation. But that's if you'll just stop cutting off people's heads and causing riots in the streets. It's Doug McBurney, and it is the Weekly World View. That's an interesting tune to bump with there. Those guys sure do seem upset all the time. It's not a very happy religion, I don't think. Doesn't it mean submission? I guess it means submit to your own anger. Submit to your own self-righteous indignation against the world. It's just bizarre. Anyway, that's what's going on in the international file. I forgot to give the warning on the Bible verse, but I suppose people who are tuning in are fairly well prepared at this point, although I could be fined by someone in the state or federal government for leaving out that warning, and I apologize for that. Let's see. From the international file, Dateline Guangzhou, China. This Thursday past, in the city of Guangzhou, Chen Fuqiao threatened to jump off Haizhou Bridge, China's Xinhua news agency has reported. Now, this particular bridge, the Haizhou Bridge, has gained a macabre reputation because 11 jumpers have thrown themselves off the bridge since just the start of April this year. So, what was happening at the bridge there in Guangzhou, China, traffic was held up for about 5 hours and a crowd gathered as Chen Fuqiao sat on the bridge, threatening to jump. Now, Chen wanted to kill himself, according to the CNN report, because he had a $300,000 debt after a failed construction project. So he's sitting there on the bridge, traffic is held up, a crowd has gathered, people are watching, he's threatening to jump. When one Lian Jiansheng, 66-year-old Chinese gentleman, broke through the police cordon and climbed up to where Cheng was sitting. Lian greeted Chen with a handshake and then pushed him off the bridge. Yeah. Yeah, Chen, he pushed him off the bridge. You want to jump? You're holding up traffic. You're ruining my day. Anyway, Chen fell 26 feet onto a partially inflated emergency air cushion. He did damage his spine and elbow. He is now recovering in a hospital. And photographs of the entire situation show Lian Jiansheng, dressed in a t-shirt and shorts, saluting the crowd after pushing Chen off the bridge. And in an interview, Mr. Jiansheng says, quote, "I pushed him off because jumpers like Chen are very selfish. Their action violates a lot of public interest. They do not really dare to kill themselves. Instead, they just want to raise the relevant government authorities' attention to their problems. Make appeals." Anyway, I just found that story to be somehow entertaining, and I'm not sure why. That's sort of macabre. Well, you know, the guy didn't die, so had he died, I probably wouldn't have reported the story. Or I wouldn't have reported it in that way. Anyway, $300,000 in debt, and the guy wants to jump off a bridge? I kind of doubt that whole thing, too. I think he just wanted attention. And I think it's fairly entertaining that this guy shoved him off the bridge. But now let's move over to Seoul, South Korea. Former South Korean President Roh Moo-hyun leapt to his death this past Saturday. Former president of a democratic nation jumped to his death. Yeah. Allegations that Mr. Roh, who was president, by the way, of South Korea from 03 to 08, the allegations were that he had accepted $6 million in bribes from a businessman while in office, and apparently these allegations were weighing heavily on the ex-leader's mind, who had apparently he had looked pretty bad in recent interviews, and he was about to face prosecutors. Roh hurled himself off a 100-foot cliff early Saturday while hiking, and he left a note on his computer that said, in part, "Too many people are suffering because of me. What's left for me for the rest of my life is just to be a burden to others. Don't blame anybody." Oh, he says, "Don't be too sad. Aren't life and death both a part of nature? Don't feel sorry. Don't blame anybody. It's destiny." He has asked to be cremated and have a small gravestone erected near his home. Pretty strange story, former president leaping to his death. Very oriental thing to do. Oh, we can't say oriental anymore. That's considered racist. It's a very Eastern thing to do. One resident of Seoul said, quote, "I was utterly shocked. They say hate the sin, but not the sinner, and that's how I feel right now." So here we've got a president who thinks it's his destiny to jump off this cliff. He thinks that life and death are both a part of nature. And we've got a resident of Seoul there that say, hate the sin, but not the sinner. Mainstream evangelicalism is obviously making serious inroads into the Korean psyche, because this is all the kind of gobbledygook that's preached in mega churches across the country. It's just bizarre. Let's see now. Now Rose Coffin returned to his hometown draped in red, and his two children sobbed following his casket to the community center near his birthplace. That's sad. Just a tragic story that the guy was driven to this just for being a, basically, in South Korea, stealing $6 million as the president. That's like petty theft. That's like, you know, that's like taking the money out of the coffee jar in Korean terms. I mean, the guys have been, Korean presidents have been convicted of stealing tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars. But this guy was obviously a pretty solid guy, and he felt pretty bad. I mean, he was a solid guy in the sense that he knew what he had done was wrong, and he felt a lot of guilt and shame about it, which is appropriate when you do something like that. You should feel a lot of guilt and shame. Now, you shouldn't go and jump off a cliff, I suppose. But the guy had a conscience, is what I'm saying. Anyway, so, you know, and just, it makes me wonder about American politicians. You know, if Nancy Pelosi or Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Harry Reid, Arlen Specter, Barry Ho, I mean, if any of you guys ever develop a conscience, if that were to happen, well, I have an old traditional Korean proverb for you. And translated loosely, it basically goes, may your hike be long, your cliff be high, and your security detail trail your steps at a significant distance. Yeah. My advice to any American politicians who may somehow develop a conscience before they die of old age of natural causes, which, is, of course, is what we hope for everyone. Well, we wish no one would have to die. But and death is not a part of nature. I mean, I suppose you could say death is a part of nature. But to associate life and death as equal parts of nature is simply to miss the point. It is to simply miss the point of life. And Mr. Roe, what was his name there? Roe Moo-hyun. Although he had a conscience, he missed the point. And he took the easy way out, and that was shameful. But at least he has a conscience, unlike some of the other folks that I just mentioned. All right, now let's move into the culture file. It's very, very thick this week. Oh, and I'm going to open with an update. You'll remember in one of the earlier broadcasts here at the Weekly Worldview, I predicted boldly that our Somali pirate that was captured would soon be a candidate for the sympathies of the American media. Well, Dateline New York from the Associated Press. And here's the first line of the article. A Somali teenager accused of leading a pirate attack on an American cargo ship off the coast of Africa pleaded not guilty Thursday. So they open up, he's a Somali teenager now. Remember when they were holding the captain with an AK-47 to his head? They called him pirates. Now he's a Somali teenager. Second paragraph. A somber-looking Abdiwali Abdikadir Muse entered a plea in a soft voice with his head down during a brief appearance in U.S. District Court in Manhattan. Afterward, his lawyer said that Muse has been kept in solitary confinement since being captured in his impoverished nation and brought to the United States last month, a predicament that's left him scared and confused. His lawyer, Deirdre Von Dornum, she says, he's a boy who fishes, and now he's ended up in solitary confinement. It's truly terrifying for him. Yeah. Anyway, so now it starts, okay? And, of course, it starts with his skirt lawyer here, okay? And which you'd expect. I mean, she's basically being paid to say that he's not guilty, even though we got video of him with an AK-47 to the captain's head back when he was a pirate. Now he's just a scared teenager. And if convicted on the most serious charge that he faces, Mr. Abdiwali Abdikadir Muse, sad teenage, somber Somali teenage boy, could face up to life in prison. Because we're living in modern Western civilization where we don't even know how to handle pirates anymore. I mean, you know what you do with a pirate. I think I already said it, so I'll leave that aside. But so it starts with the pirates. All right. Let's see here. Dateline Olympia, Washington. Linda Fleming has become the first woman to kill herself legally in Washington State. Yes, the 66-year-old woman with late-stage pancreatic cancer wanted to be clear-headed at death, so she became the first person to kill herself under Washington State's new assisted suicide law known as Death with Dignity. Yeah, she didn't like the ever-stronger doses of medication that it was taking so that she could deal with the pain of her pancreatic cancer. And she says, quote, I'm a very spiritual person. Well, she said, because she's now dead. She said, I'm a very spiritual person. It's very important to me to be conscious, clear-minded, and alert at the time of my death. The powerful pain medications were making it difficult to maintain the state of mind I wanted to have at my death, and I knew I would have to increase the dosages. So she took advantage of a new law in Olympia, Washington, in Washington State that allows doctors to prescribe lethal doses of medication. Now, a gentleman who campaigned against the law, one Chris Carlson, he's with a group called the Coalition Against Assisted Suicide. He called the death unfortunate. He said, any premature death is a sad occasion, and it diminishes us all. And I agree with Chris Carlson on that, but another sad occasion that diminishes us all is that you lead a group called the Coalition Against Assisted Suicide. The fact that that group has to exist, number one, and second, that it's not just the Coalition Against Suicide. Now we're specializing. Now it's the Coalition Against Assisted Suicide. That's how bizarre Western civilization has become in just the last 10 years or so. Now, last November, according to the Associated Press story, Washington State became the second state to have a voter-approved assisted suicide law, and it's based on a law adopted by Oregon voters back in 97. And since then, about 400 Oregonians have used the law to end their lives. Well, they didn't actually use the law. The story says they used the law. They used some drugs, I suppose. So, basically, two doctors must certify that the patient has a terminal condition and 6 months or less to live, and the patient must make two oral requests 15 days apart, plus a written request that is witnessed by two people, and patients must then administer the drugs themselves. And if you follow all of the regulations, then you can kill yourself in Washington. It's just bizarre. How could it be that we have ended up at a state in Western civilization where we have laws that say if you follow this and if you do this and if you do that, well, then you can kill yourself. How could we have possibly ended up here? Well, I'll tell you how right after this. It's Doug McBurney. It is the Weekly Worldview, and I am back to explain to you how it is that our governing officials and the citizens who elect them and who are governed by them seem to have lost their minds. We're actually passing laws that say if you do it properly, you can kill yourself. Now, how is that? How has that happened? Well, let's go to a WorldNet Daily story. There's a new law that bans picking a baby's sex by abortion. And this new law is supported by the National Right to Life Committee. I read the headline. And, well, the story doesn't quite match the headline. And the headline in and of itself is not all that encouraging. Because the headline would imply that we have a law that says if you want to choose your baby's sex, you can't kill the baby just because it's the wrong sex. Now, there's a myriad of other reasons for which you can kill the baby, apparently, but not for this particular reason. Now, this law, as I said, was supported by the National Right to Life Committee, and let me just tell you about it. It's from Oklahoma. A bill was introduced in the state's Senate and House chambers by Senator Todd Lamb of Edmond, Oklahoma, and Representative Dan Sullivan of Tulsa, both Republicans. And it is known as the Statistical Reporting of Abortion Act. Now listen to this, ladies and gentlemen. This law requires physicians who perform abortions to report certain information to the state's Department of Health, including the mother's age, marital status, education level, number of prior pregnancies, reason for the abortion, method of payment, type of medical health insurance, relationship with the father, cost of the abortion, and whether an ultrasound was given. And once all of this is reported and the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, then you can kill the baby. Now, the law also directs the department to publish annual abortion reports on its website to ensure compliance with the provisions of the act by conducting periodic inspections of places where innocent people are murdered legally. Now, I editorialized a little bit. They say there are provisions of the act that cause inspections of places where abortions are performed. Basically, they want to inspect the places where innocent persons are murdered to make sure that it's being done according to the laws and regulations supported by the National Right to Life Committee. And as long as everything's being done according to the desires of the National Right to Life Committee, then you can kill the baby. All right, now, Representative Sullivan, the Republican, said in a statement, "In many countries, parents are allowed to create genetically designed babies, including self-selection of the child's sex. This legislation," he says, "would restrict that practice in Oklahoma and require reporting of the abortions that are occurring." Did you hear what Representative Sullivan said? He said this legislation would restrict. Restrict, what does that mean? Does that mean it ends abortion for sex selection in the state of Oklahoma? No, it simply regulates it. If you report everything properly, you can still kill the baby. I mean, we're not unreasonable. We're the National Right to Life Committee. We're not unreasonable. We support the killing of some kids. We understand that some innocent human beings must be murdered. We understand that. After all, we've been working with you for nearly 40 years now to regulate the murder of innocent persons. We're not unreasonable, citizens of Oklahoma. We just want to restrict the idea of perhaps aborting a child based on its sex. We want to restrict that, and to do that, we want certain reporting mechanisms put in place so that we can restrict such activity. It's unbelievable. It's as bad as registering sex offenders. You know, people who molest kids, they want to have a registry so that we can report on them. Well, you know my opinion is that there should be a registry system for sex offenders and abortionists as well. And the registry should be carved in granite, generally, and put in an open field just above the body of said perpetrator. But I digress. This is just, it's unbelievably shocking that the pro-life community in America is so pathetic that we are to the point where we're trying to pass laws to report every aspect of exactly how these innocent persons are murdered. And that if our enemies stay within the boundaries of those laws that apparently we support, that we're not going to be so unreasonable as to say that you can't murder innocent people at all. Does that sound unreasonable to say that you shall not murder? Does that sound unreasonable to you? If you send money to the National Right to Life Committee and you believe in your heart that an unborn child is a human person that has a right to life, you are unreasonable, according to the National Right to Life Committee. You're unreasonable. You mean you want to stop abortion? Well, that's simply an untenable position. You're not very politically adept. You're not very astute. Haven't you paid attention for the last 40 years as we've lost battle after battle after battle after battle after battle? As the National Right to Life Committee has raised millions upon millions upon tens of millions of dollars and lost battle after battle after battle, haven't you been paying attention? Ending abortion is simply not possible. Let's settle for restricting and regulating the murder of innocent persons. And we'll call ourselves the National Right to Life Committee. Because it's a pretty good moniker, and you get on the phone and people give money. Because people are pro-life. A lot of Christian folks out there are pro-life. And National Right to Life Committee sounds pretty good. But we're not so unreasonable that we want to actually make abortion illegal. We're not so unreasonable that we want to make the killing of innocent human persons illegal. No. No, we're the National Right to Life Committee. And we support the killing of most unborn kids. Most innocent human persons who are threatened with murder, National Right to Life Committee will not stand up and defend them, because that would just be untenable. It'd be really hard to raise money. And it would be really hard to stay in business for another 30 years. I mean, we got retirements coming up. We got 401k plans. We've lost 30%. This battle must continue. All right. So I knew I wouldn't get to all this stuff, so I'm going to try and end on a lighter note. Let's see here. Dateline Cheyenne, Wyoming. A man said he saved his dog's life after sucking venom from a rattlesnake bite out of the animal's nose. Yeah. Bobby Jenkins said that cut open the dog's nose, sucked out the venom. He began feeling sick. He ended up going to hospital. He had to receive several doses of Rattler anti-venom. Each vial cost $3,500. This guy needed four of them. But still, the Associated Press reports a man said he saved his dog's life after sucking venom. Now, do they think he just made this up so he could get in the news? Do they think he ended up in the hospital paying $14,000 for anti-venom because he wanted to make the AP wire? It's weird. You know, journalism school graduates and morons with degrees in nebulous fields like communications, they report a story like this, and they have to put in there that the man said he saved his dog's life, because we can't be sure that anything is true. Yet they quote Nancy Pelosi as if every word she says were the gospel truth. And they report a relatively unexamined fossil of a monkey is finally the missing link. It's just bizarre where the news media has gotten to. Let's see here. What do we want to end with? Oh, Dateline Hazlet, New Jersey. The owner of a New Jersey pest control company has been charged with animal cruelty after a squirrel was found dead on a rooftop in one of their traps. Yeah, the Monmouth County, New Jersey Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Animals charged Kathleen Buck, the owner of Critter Ritter. That's right, Critter Ritter. They specialize in pest control. They charged her with animal cruelty. Yeah. Apparently, one of these professional complexes hired Critter Ritter to help get rid of the squirrel. And, a trap was set for the animal. But no one returned to check on the fate of the squirrel. And the squirrel was found cooked to death on the hot roof. Just a sad, sad story. Buck faces four counts of animal cruelty, including one that cites her for not providing the squirrel with adequate food, water, and shelter. Yes. Now, this is a pest control person. She specializes in killing pests like squirrels. Yet she's being charged. Now, the squirrel was cooked to death, and I can't help but ask myself, perhaps if someone had gone up on the roof and eaten the squirrel and made a good meal out of the squirrel, perhaps Ms. Buck wouldn't be in so much trouble. Ladies and gentlemen, that's the Weekly Worldview for this week. Thank you for being with us. I'll be back with you next time. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.